long time, Nick. But we're here for another episode of a comic book podcast. And this one is a little special. We have a friend with us. His name is Lake Lucas. So say hey, Lake.
Hello.
So that's Lake. And he's going to be here to talk with us about Watchmen. So
yeah, so you've read it before, but I have not.
Yes, I read it a few years ago.
And Lake, you have not read it.
No, before, this is my first go at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So so I think we're going to have a lot of cool discussion on this since you guys are reading
I've seen the movie before.
And I think we'll do the movie later. And I think we can talk about like those two. I think that would be
We've talked about movies and TV shows before, so might as well.
Yeah. So we're going to do this as a, I guess, a four-issue mini-series kind of thing, where we'll talk about the first first four issues, and then the middle four, and then the last four. So we'll do an episode for each of those chunks, and then we'll do one after we watch the movie and talk about kind of the two.
And kind of an overall
of
the story.
Yeah, first, a little bit about Watchmen. So it first came out on in 1986 and 1987. It was 12 individual issues that came out, and then they collected it into the graphic novel. And I guess it's really, like, I didn't realize it was 12 issues that were put out like that. I always thought it was just written as a graphic novel. So I think it's cool that it did that, because it's definitely lived on more as a graphic novel.
Which is cool, because everyone gets the whole story.
Yeah. And I guess from, like, from actually collecting stuff to where I'm, like, getting issues every month, to think of Watchmen coming out that way is pretty cool. I started another, Alan Moore is the writer of Watchmen, and he had another series just going on a little while ago called Providence, and it was 12 issues again, and I got really burnt out on it as, like, the individual issues, but I think once it's collected as a full graphic novel, like, all of them together will be cool. Because his books, I guess they've always, the single issues have kind of taken a little while to come out. Like, sometimes a comic will, it'll get delayed or something like that. So I think with Providence, at least, there would be like 3 or 4 months sometimes where it was that long before another issue. And so it was just hard to really keep up with. And it was dense and it was creepy. It was like this real H.P. Lovecraft kind of thing. But it was cool. I definitely want to read more of it. But anyway, so I just think it would have been interesting to have been reading Watchmen as single issues. But so it came out in 86, 87, and it's written by Alan Moore. The artist is David Gibbons, and John Higgins is the colorist. And I just figured this out. Lynn Wine is the one of the editors, and he's the guy that created Swamp Thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think he was the writer for Swamp Thing, because the artist for Swamp Thing, I think, just
he's well, Alan Moore also worked on Swamp Thing.
And he also worked on Swamp Thing. So, that was
maybe
pretty cool.
Maybe they, like, knew each other.
Well, they would have worked together probably on Swamp Thing, and I think that was before Watchmen.
So tell me this. Was this Alan Moore's first graphic novel, or I really, this is kind of my first introduction to him.
You know, let's see. I don't really know everything as he's put them out. I don't think this was very early. I think this was kind of in his prime. Man, he's a crazy guy. All right. So V for Vendetta was first, it looks like, in 82, 85. Then Marvel Man, Miracle Man, I don't know what that is. Swamp Thing, 84 to 87. Then Watchmen.
Oh, so this is right after he did Swamp Thing.
So this is pretty early on. That's cool. Yeah. And then Batman the Killing Joke was after that. Then a series called From Hell, A Small Killing, Lost Girls, Top Ten, Promethea, Tom Strong, The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. He did in 99. And I guess it's still going. The Courtyard, Necronomicon, Fashion Beast, and then Providence is the last comic he's done. But he's done other things. He's done some novels. I feel like I've seen his name on some other stuff. But so like V for Vendetta is one that he's really well known for, and The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. So, and obviously Watchmen, I think, is one of his biggest things. But I don't know a lot about him, but if you look up interviews with him, He's
with Alan Moore.
Yeah, he looks like a wizard, kind of.
Well,
so just like long curly hair. He's British. Yeah,
and, obviously.
And he, yeah, I don't know. Like, he has a very strong opinion on a lot of things. So if you look him up, it's pretty interesting. But yeah, that's its own thing.
Yeah, we should have Alan Moore episode.
Yeah. And then I don't know much about Dave Gibbons either.
So what I wanted to...
Yeah.
What I wanted to say, coming at Alan Moore's work cold, I didn't really have any expectations.
Yeah.
And I didn't really have any frame of reference. I had seen Watchmen, but this was my first experience actually reading any of his work.
So you both have seen the movie, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
When it came out, which was... When was that?
I don't know. It was a few years
2008
ago.
2008 or it felt that range of 2000s.
Yeah, 2008 or 9, I think. That sounds right. But
yeah, and I think the thing that struck me first was how the story is almost like a meta commentary on the whole idea of a superhero and what it means to become a hero, how your life leads you to that place. That was really interesting.
Like, you get that more from the book.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, I don't remember the movie doing that nearly as well, but yeah, Watchmen is sort of it's like a commentary, I think, on a lot of political stuff that was happening in the '80s. And it's also kind of a, like changed history. We've seen a little bit of that with like Vietnam, and we can get into that later, but like how Dr. Manhattan essentially just comes down and is like, mm-hmm. I'm going to save Vietnam. Like, they win Vietnam because of him. So it's like there's changed mm-hmm. political stuff, but it's also kind of a commentary of the time. And a lot of stuff with comic books, I think. The way it's told, and exactly like what you just said about the superheroes, that it's sort of almost like it goes back to talk about like the early superheroes like Superman and Batman.
Yeah, and when I first started reading it, it became very apparent that it wasn't his first work, you know, and I had asked you that earlier, but I don't think you could write this story if you didn't have some writing of your own that you'd done about superheroes in the past or that you had at the very least read.
Yeah, I'm sure he was they're big fans of like those superheroes and that kind of stuff, but I haven't read all of Alan Moore's run on Swamp Thing, but I have the first couple books and I've started it, and I really like Swamp Thing. Like, we've talked about Swamp Thing a lot.
Yeah, I read the first two issues you let me borrow.
Oh, the New 52. So that was with Scott Snyder.
Oh, that's right.
So he wrote that, the first part of it.
And, but I hadn't read Swamp Thing at all.
It's
before,
cool. So. Like, I really like those issues.
Yeah. Those are cool.
And his whole Snyder's run on that was really good. I think it was one of the strongest things I read in the New 52. But so more stuff, it's like it's when he took over Swamp Thing, he didn't really take it over, I don't think, but when he started writing Swamp Thing, it had kind of lost steam. Like, he was a cool character for a while, and then the creators, I haven't read them, but I think they either just got boring or they just sort of didn't have much to run on anymore. And then so Alan Moore came in and changed a little bit about Swamp Thing, made it a little darker, and it sort of like breathed new life into this character.
And this is a recent?
So that was run before Watchmen he did that. So it's also in the 80s. But like since then, Swamp Thing has sort of been a...
Oh, wait. So it had fallen out of popularity back then, too.
Yeah. Like, I think they were maybe only 20 issues in. So like a year, year and a half, maybe.
Okay.
That the original people were writing on it. And then maybe it just kind of faded off and, you know, they didn't reboot it. It kind of ended. And then Alan Moore came in and like picked it up and almost made it his own, but it just like really, it was cool. So the parts I've read, I really like, and it's definitely of all the Swamp Thing stuff, I think it's held in highest regard of like some of the best.
Yeah. And then so he did Watchmen after that.
And he did Watchmen. Yeah.
Okay.
Swamp Thing wasn't his first one, right?
Mm-mm. He did V for Vendetta was the first one listed on Wikipedia, which is really impressive. I haven't read that one, but
I'd be very intrigued to read that.
It's always, you know, I mean, they made a movie of it, so had to have been successful.
Was it good?
Yeah, see, and I don't remember that movie, but I don't think I loved it. but I can't really remember.
You got to rewatch it.
Yeah, and I'd like to read it too.
Natalie Portman's shaved head.
Yeah, I remember that part.
I was talking to Whitney about V for Vendetta the other day, and she said that she didn't know that the character that it was based upon was a real thing.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if I knew that.
Yeah, no, what was his name? The guy that tried to blow up Parliament?
But I don't know, like, of who that mask he wears, like, that's a real, okay. I think I knew that's a real mask and a real...
Guy Fawkes.
Yep. Well, okay, so, Nick, what have your thoughts been on just the part, so we've only read the first four issues, and then we've all hard stopped there until we have this discussion.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts, just sort of general, like issues 1 through 4 so far? What do you think?
Well, compared to what I've read, which I'm getting a pretty good collection, but I don't know. I haven't read a ton and I haven't read a ton of superhero stuff.
You haven't read a lot of superhero stuff.
So that's also something, but I've seen a lot of superhero movies, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, you understand what a superhero is. So.
Yeah. I'd say it's very cerebral and it's very poignant already in the first four issues, which you don't get that in every comic book. It's usually definitely like not. The Flintstones is really funny and I love it for that. But I'd say, you know, Batman in the 80s was kind of similar to this, where it's kind of serious. But
Batman's always kind of serious though. Like he doesn't get funny very often.
Yeah. But I think there was a quote was in Spawn talking about refined corporate superheroes compared to this character that Todd McFarlane has made. And so that's what it reminded me of when I was reading this.
Yeah.
It goes against, I mean, it shows superheroes like after they're retired, just being normal people. And they're not really superheroes. They're just like, there's only one character so far that has
any sort of like magical powers.
Yeah.
Yeah, normally superheroes are shown at like their peak, and in this one it begins after their prime.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting.
It really is.
There's like multiple generations of them too.
Well, and okay, so one thing I really like, hang on.
God, that sound. I'm going to leave all this in though.
I probably should oil those.
I have some WD-40.
All right. Well, I guess, does anyone have any thoughts before we sort of start jumping into like
the
progression of the story? Because that's kind of where I'm going now. So any more just like first impression, kind of like what you're excited to see maybe?
Yeah, I feel like since this is so early on that it may have influenced a lot of the stuff that I've read. For example, the latest Vision run.
That was really good.
Yeah.
There are a lot of parallels between Dr. Manhattan and Vision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are two pretty cool characters.
And so far, you know, Doc Manhattan is definitely the best character. I mean, not just because he has superpowers.
He's this giant naked blue guy.
He's a giant naked blue guy who can do anything, but he's just the way he just like doesn't care about anything. But it's like funny he's also just really sad for him.
And he's always having like 10 thoughts at once.
Yeah. Which is like his one crux, you know.
Yeah, the chapter that was based on, I'm glad we got to the chapter that was his story.
Yeah, that
was that's kind of where we've left off. It honestly, like I was telling, I think I was talking to Israel at work today, and I said that issue, like issue 4, is one of the best just issues of a comic I've read in a long time.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Just,
yeah.
It is a standalone piece. It is just incredible.
Yeah, it's super it's beautiful.
And it's just a bunch of like bright blue and pink. And yes, it's metaphysical. And I like that they're on Mars and the sand is pink and not red, but it fits with it. Like the color in this book is incredible.
Yeah.
Well, and not only that, but he's experiencing time out of order. And it's has a lot of parallels with the movie Arrival from last year.
Yeah.
That character had a lot of those experiences.
Yeah. All right.
Do you guys want to start the podcast now?
Oh no. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I should hit record. All right. So it starts off with Rorschach in his journal. Well, you know, First Blood yep. and the smiley face pin. And
bean he's juice.
Just, yeah, yeah. Human he's just kind of going along. He's talking. I really liked his journal entries. Usually I can't really get into, you know, the blocked off.
Well, yeah.
Stuff. Like, usually it's just like they're like inner dialogue kind of stuff. It doesn't really usually drive the plot as much as I would hope.
That's true. Like, I think a lot of, like, I doubt Flintstones does that. I don't think Trillium really did it much. I'm trying to, Nameless kind of did, but that was an interesting, that was an interesting narration.
Does Rural City do that? Because that's a series kind of.
Maybe a little. I think so, because I think the ghost narrator kid is doing that, but I like think, some comics do that really well.
Yeah.
And I think this one doesn't.
I think chapter one is really great because it kind of establishes a baseline paranoia from the very beginning. Rorschach, he's convinced, like he's had this struggle for so long that he's like convinced that there's something wrong. And that kind of kicks off. The whole story.
Everyone calls like says that he's like sick in the head. He's crazy, you know.
Well, he is crazy, but he's incredible.
But he's the one that who's kind of guiding us through the story.
At least in that first chapter, I think this series does a good job of kind of changing who that main voice is. Like Rorschach is definitely one of the voices that we hear this story through.
Yeah, and that's true. You do get a lot of different perspectives.
In like because chapter four was Dr. Manhattan.
Right.
And then if you've been reading the supplemental pieces at the end, then you're hearing a lot from that, the original Night Owl, right?
Yeah, and he really starts at the very beginning.
Yeah, and so that's what I like, because we kind of have two timelines going on here. We've got the original one that started back in like 39. And I think it's interesting that's when the year that they became, the superhero thing started. Cause it's also the year Batman debuted. He came out in 39. So I don't know if you picked that.
You're talking about the Minutemen?
Yeah. Okay. And so like, that's when they start to form is 1939. Yeah. So I think it's like he kind of starts him at the actual time in history that superheroes, like in comic books, started to really come out like that. Because you had Superman and Batman at that point and tons of others. So that's how I think it's kind of mirroring our real life. And politically, it kind of makes sense just because it really goes into, especially like the current time zone in here that's like in the 80s, you have like Vietnam's just ended. And Nixon's still around and like not a bad guy. And just you know what I mean? Like there's just a lot of stuff that it's kind of talking about.
Yeah.
What I was struck by was the artwork in chapter one. Mm-hmm. 1980s New York was so dirty and dingy. And I think that, what was his name? Gibbons? He was really able to capture a lot of that. Mm-hmm. Because when you think about, you know, like Harlem in the 80s, it was a different time.
I really like the page that shows Rorschach after he shoots the grappling hook into the guy that jumped out the window or fell out.
Oh,
the
window. So
like that scene, that picture of him there is a really cool one. So
Rorschach he finds that button on the ground when he's walking.
Yeah.
And he's walking to.
Right. It starts with a guy. We see a guy in getting thrown out of a window.
Yeah.
And it's sort of
we don't see who beats him up.
Don't know who's done it, but we see the police that are investigating the scene because the guy laying on the street and is dead. And so the police are looking through his apartment and it's kind of jumping between that and the past where we're seeing the fight, but from the perspective of the attacker. So, yeah, we don't know who has killed this person. And in the meantime, the police are just sort of talking about it and how it's probably just like a suicide or, you know, they don't seem to real concerned about it.
Even though he's a huge guy.
Yeah, he's a big guy.
He's famous for, being a war hero.
Well, I don't think this guy isn't.
Is this not the comedian?
Well, it is, but that's his identity. So, like, everyone doesn't know that this guy is the comedian.
Right.
So they just think, oh, wow, it's a big guy. I'm surprised he couldn't fight off an attacker. Oh,
I just thought
Rorschach finds it.
Well, he looks exactly the same.
Well, he has a mask on, man. You got to remember superhero rules that just like something that covers up your eyes counts as a mask.
That's why I like Rorschach's mask.
Yeah. Rorschach has a cool mask.
Yeah. So one thing that I didn't get is I really am unclear about the symbolism with the smiley face and the blood drop. I don't know if we learn that later on in the story, but I'm not a...
Well, so all we know right now is that... Well, okay, so the smiley face was part of the comedian's costume. So he was wearing that on his jacket, like on his bathrobe. He had a smiley face on there. So, and we see in the scene where he gets like actually thrown from the window, you see the smiley face like come off of him. So Rorschach picks it up and it's got blood on it. So then he just carries it around. So, I mean, that symbol does come up, but I mean, that's where it came from.
Because his death is like the catalyst for everything that happens.
But so then we have this, our masked
figure. So maybe it's like a metaphor for like, there's blood on the smiling face and stuff's about to hit the fan.
Yeah, my favorite part of the whole, when Rorschach is going back into his journal and you see these shots again, it's at the end of two, and he's telling that joke about the clown.
Oh, Pugliacci. Yeah, that's a really good joke.
Basically, like, who's going to cheer up the comedians?
I'm going to read it because it is a good joke.
Yeah.
Her joke once, man goes to doctor, says he's depressed, says life seems harsh and cruel, says he feels all alone in a threatening world where what lies ahead is vague and uncertain. Doctor says, treatment is simple. Great clown Pagliacci, I think that's how you say it, is in town tonight. Go and see him. That'll pick you up. Man bursts into tears. Says, but doctor, I am Pagliacci. Yeah. Good joke. Everybody laughs.
So basically, like, on snare drum. In this situation, who's the superhero's hero, you know?
Yeah.
That's kind of the comedian's whole... Well, he, like, breaks down at one part in the... issue
three. I think issue three as well.
And he's just kind of gets to the point of despair. I mean, it's a good point, you know, like who's there to save the superheroes when they need saving, when they're supposed to save everybody. And it probably like goes into a couple other things, but what you're saying about the smiley face with the blood, that might be some kind of symbolism there with the comedian having to both die and also.
Yeah. And in chapter one, we cover a lot of ground.
Yeah.
Like, you meet Rorschach, you find out that there's something... And him
investigating that scene is really cool.
Yeah, you find out that there's something amiss, right? Yeah.
Because he puts together that the guy that was killed, he finds a secret compartment in a closet and finds his uniform and a picture of him and some of the other superheroes that we'll meet later. And so he kind of puts together, like, oh, that guy was the comedian.
Yeah, and basically he goes to kind of warn his previous colleagues that, like, he thinks something is going down.
Yep.
And which kind of takes us to, who was the first one that he met? Was it?
So we meet Hollis and Daniel, and they're essentially the Night Owl. So it's another superhero that was in the picture with...
And was it both generations, or was it just the one?
So it's just... So the old guy was the original Night Owl back in
that's Hollis.
40s, and that's Hollis. And then Daniel, I'm not sure what his last name is, but he is essentially just found that guy and was like, hey, can I be Night Owl since you're not being Night Owl anymore? And he was like, yeah, sure. So they're just like friends because he's sort of the, like, Robin to Batman.
Well, and then we find out later on that the reason that he kind of retired and was stepping down is because he was kind of in awe of these superpowered heroes that had, like, Dr. Manhattan.
Right.
And so as...
Yeah, because, I mean, they're getting old and he's sort of seeing just how, like, they've stopped doing what they do to an extent. And there's real people coming up that's like, oh, wow, like, that's a real thing, just like you said. So there's kind of a lot of reasons why they all kind of stop, and a lot of it's some political or even like his seem more just like, I don't know, like mentally or whatever. He just sort of thought, you know what, like, I need to stop doing this. But then like Rorschach, no, he never gave up.
And so we're also introduced to Dr. Manhattan. Was her name Lori Jupiter?
Lori and her mom Sally.
Yes. And at this point, when I was reading it, I was like, Okay, so we don't know how Dr. Manhattan got that huge or those powers. So it was really interesting to because it seemed like it was basically people dressed up, and then you've got this like legitimate
and
superhero.
These are all original characters, right?
They're not. Yeah, he made all these guys up. So Rorschach's just sort of investigating, like, okay, I'm going to try to find out a little bit more about this guy, Edward Blake, and because he breaks some guy's fingers for something. So the Night Owls, we kind of get to know more, but Hollis, the older Night Owl, he is, he wrote an autobiography in, like, as his character did. And so at the end of the first three chapters, we get sections from his autobiography. So that's another, like, probably I'd say the second main narrator that we have, at least for that first part. I don't think the Under the Hood stuff continues throughout it, but he's kind of a voice that's also telling us while we're seeing what's going on right now with the comedian being murdered and all of that, he's kind of giving us a better view of the story of the older superheroes, because that's where we learn, like, about comedian raping Sally Jupiter, and we learn more about the, like, the what is it, Hooded Justice? You know, so we hear about all the original superheroes by reading that. So it's kind of like it's another timeline that we have, and Hollis is sort of our narrator in that section. And I really liked those parts as I read them this time.
And we
more
got,
than last time.
And in those sections, you get a lot of background on the characters. But I think the only one, or the one that you get the least amount of information on, is, in fact, Hooded Justice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's isn't there like a, they think like some Polish dude was,
so one, yeah, that's one of the theories, that a giant like European wrestler disappeared at the same time that Hooded Justice disappeared, because it
yeah, that was a really interesting backstory.
Yeah, and then so that body turned up later, and they're like, oh, was that Hooded Justice, because he was executed? So they're like, we don't know. But yeah, I mean, that's where we trying to think, like, I think that's where World War II happened, like when they were, when the original group were there of the superheroes. And
1939.
Yeah, trying to think who all there was, like all those superheroes, because they had some pretty funny names. I thought one of them was Captain something.
Metropolis, Captain Metropolis.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, they're a bunch of funny kind of characters. But
well, one thing that all those characters kind of establishes, it's just kind of a different, almost more local style superhero group, kind of like the Defenders, you know.
Yeah, yep, because they're just right there in their city.
And it's interesting you brought up Batman earlier when it started, and you said it started in 1939. It's kind of the same, more of a masked vigilantes than a superhero.
Yeah, and so that's what those guys are. Well, but so essentially they're just some older superheroes. Captain Metropolis was one of them. Night Owl, the comedian, was a big one. I don't know if I said Sally Jupiter or not, but, and they just eventually disbanded after, Watchmen. No, sorry. and they just disbanded after, Dr. Manhattan kind of came on the scene.
Yeah. Dr. Manhattan kind of changed the scene.
Yeah.
Because he could affect the world on a much larger scale than any, I believe they call them hooded adventurers.
Yeah, because he can do it. He's an actual superhero. And they're like, well, we don't have to do this anymore.
Yeah, and I think Hollis Mason took that heart, right? Because, I mean, he just was like, I want to go back and work on cars.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's where the, like, of the supplemental stuff, that kind of ends whenever he just tells the part of kind of like what he stopped doing, or what he started doing after he stopped being one of the Minutemen. That's what the group was called. So, and it gives a history of like what happened to each one. Some of them died. One went crazy. Sally retired and had her kid. She was called the Silk Spectre. That's right. Cause Sally Jupiter already sounds like a superhero name. So I always forget that it's the Silk Spectre was
what's really cool about this issue. The second chapter is, that guy who jumped out the window hits his funeral. The comedian.
Yep.
James, or Blake or whatever.
Yeah.
His real name is I guess Edward we don't Blake. Know that he's...
So, like, the general population of this world, they don't know that Edward Blake
was the comedian. I mean, us as a reader.
Yeah, we definitely know. Because that's what Rorschach proves in the first issue.
Gotcha.
So,
When they're in their funeral, what I really liked about these, at least the first four issues, was I can really see why they wanted to make a movie out of this. Because every panel is, like, artwork for, like, you know, scene to scene for a movie.
When he did, like, if you notice... Most pages have a 9-panel layout. So it's kind of an interesting thing to where it's like, it's very consistent. There are a few times where he'll have like one that takes up two or three. Like, you know, he'll do some, but it's always kind of in that same block pattern.
They like look there's like not storyboards.
Crazy. Yeah. There's not any like crazy panel layouts. They're all pretty uniform.
Mm-hmm. So it'll like zoom in to someone's face at their funeral and then it'll cut to another scene. That's very filmic, the way they did that. And that's how you kind of get some backstory with the comedian and how he was an asshole.
Yeah, he's a big asshole.
But he was also like...
There's one part where he shoots
a good guy.
And did you say he's kind of a good guy?
Like, well, I mean,
he's not...
He's not evil, but he's a bad guy.
He's a psychopath.
Yeah, he's
crazy. But he's on the side of good. But like there's one part where is he? I guess that's part of the question, but
like on a scale from Sith to Jedi, you know.
He does kill a pregnant woman because she
wants him to stay.
Because she wants him to stay because it's his kid.
And then she cuts him in the face.
Yeah, she cuts his face and so he kills her. So I mean he did that.
And he also tried to rape.
Tried to rape Sally Jupiter in the early days, and Hooded Justice. Saved him there.
Yeah, my saved notes her there. On chapter two was that the comedian was a total asshole.
Yeah, totally is. He's not a likable character at all. And I like how his costume changed from like a yellow clown kind of thing.
To like Captain America.
That's when like Captain America, but like the Punisher with an American flag. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like he's just, he'll just kill anybody kind of.
Well, because he got in a knife fight and it pierced his suit. That's why he wanted to get like the armor.
Oh, I understand.
I think that's pretty early on.
And so we get a little bit of his story to where he is sent to Vietnam to like save that situation with Dr. Manhattan. So we get like a little taste of that, and it's where we see him just like killing people with a flamethrower and shooting that pregnant woman. So you definitely at that point know that he's not a good guy. And no one really seemed to like him, but it's like he was part of their crowd. So Rorschach's kind of going around to the other people and just kind of warning them. And
yeah, well, it was close to home.
The second one also introduces Moloch, which is our evil villain.
Yeah, that's how we get retired. The story. That's how we get the story of the woman that gets shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like the weakest villain of all villains.
Well, but he's also kind of retired. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And he has cancer, right?
Yeah, but villains are not supposed to retire. Villains are supposed to go to jail.
Superheroes shouldn't retire either. But yeah, like somehow he's made it. And that's one thing that they even talk about, Hollis talks about in his autobiography piece, that like the villains changed too, that they got more like, you know, criminals electronically
they didn't dress up in silly costumes anymore.
And so that's what like the superheroes kind of stopped as the villains did. And at one point he was like, we still caught them, but they, but like it wasn't as much of an adventure. We also meet, I'm always completely unsure how to say this guy's name. I want to say Ozymandias, but I know that's not it.
Ozymandias?
Ozymandias, because D-I-A-S. Ozymandias? All right, I'm going to say Ozymandias. If that's wrong, y'all can come after me. Chapter 2, we do see a little bit of Dr. Manhattan. So he can grow to immense size. He's just giant naked blue guy, no hair. He has a circle with a dot on his head, and they say what that is later.
Yeah, I thought that was cool that they included that detail.
Yeah,
because from the first pane that he was in, I was wondering what was up with his face tat.
Yeah,
I mean, I didn't really question it. He could grow really tall and he had wide eyes, so
yeah, so whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, true.
But so he's working with Lori at some science base. I love when Rorschach comes in to talk to him, and he's just like, I said I think you ought to go outside And then all of a sudden he just shows up outside. So we know he can teleport people. He can teleport himself. And he can go through stuff because there he is sticking his hand through that machine. So
yeah, so, he's got an interesting combination of powers.
He does all kinds of stuff. Yeah,
he's like God.
Yeah, yeah. And we don't get too much else from him. And even his voice is different. Like, you know, I mean, that's another cool thing with the way I love the lettering in this book. Like Rorschach's bubbles are always sort of like scribbly around the ends, and Dr. Manhattan's always have like a bubble of blue.
It makes it really easy to read it.
Yeah. And even just the normal bubbles, I really like, because they're sort of like made with lines. It's not a clean curve. Like you can, they're kind of boxy sometimes, but I really like the lettering in this. Yeah. So before we get to three, like, so just the art in general, and the colors and stuff, what do you guys think of that? I mean, you've read some other comic books with, I feel like you guys have read some kind of pretty cool stuff. Like you've read a lot of Marvel.
Yeah.
Like I know you've read a bunch of, like you've read some DC stuff, some Image stuff. So you've seen a good, I'd say like a pretty good variety of different kind of art in that thing. Arts, colors, all that. So what do you what do you guys think of this one?
I think it's a very good use of color. Any scene with Rorschach is kind of noirish. Like, there's always a lot of shadow there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not black and white, but it kind of gives off that vibe.
Yeah. I love his pants, too.
I do love that his mask changes.
That is really
cool. In every pain.
Yeah. And I think that was a part they did really well in the movie. Just to, like...
Oh, yeah.
I remember his mask looked awesome.
Yeah, that was really good.
Yeah.
Because it makes you wonder, like, is this... Like, all right, so like we talked about earlier, how really, for the most part, they're all just masked vigilantes. No real power. Some of them are smarter. Some have tools.
They're all good at fighting.
Yeah, they can all fight. But, like, the only one... So, Dr. Manhattan clearly is, like, mystical. You know, he's got... He's a superhuman.
Yeah.
No one else really is so far. Like, we know that Ozymandias is a genius. So, he's really smart. And Night Owl has a lot of cool gadgets. We see a little bit of those in his, basement warehouse kind of thing. And then, like, Rorschach's a good detective, and he has a grappling hook, so, like, he's got some tools. Mm-hmm. But his mask is kind of mystical. You know what I mean? Like,
you could almost believe that he had some kind of superpower.
Yeah, that's sort of what I think. That, like, I don't think he does, but it sort of puts him in this, like, above the others. And maybe craziness is his power.
He also seems way more into it than
He's definitely way too into it.
Also, in the epilogues to the chapters, it's kind of, you get the sense that he's kind of a Steve Rogers kind of character.
Yeah.
He's just like, I want to serve the greater good.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And even their time periods are similar as well. So I think there are some parallels. He's like Captain America, Batman.
Yeah. But I think where Rorschach bends too far is that he, like, he'll definitely hurt people.
I'm sorry. I was talking about...
Oh.
I was talking about Night Owl.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. No, he seems very Batman-ish, because he does seem sort of, like, he's wealthy. He's got gadgets. His suit, I think, is really goofy, how it's just, like, this giant, like...
Yeah, round, and the coloring in the comic book makes it look like it's burgundy. Is it burgundy?
No, I think it's supposed to be brown. We don't see him in that a lot, but I think he's in it.
Well, anyway.
But, yeah, like, he's a good detective, but he totally goes too far to where he has some moral code that he's like, this is how the, like, world should be.
People.
Yeah. And it's like, there's one scene where it talks about when they were trying to get everyone to retire. I think that's in issue 4. He goes over, like, how they, so here's how they each reacted when, a thing called the Keen Act was passed recently, like right before, kind of like, I think it was in the early 80s. So right before the story picked up now.
Yeah. And that made being a vigilante illegal.
Yeah. And so they made everyone either unmask themselves or retire. And this was with, like, Dr. Manhattan, the current Night Owl, Daniel, Silk Spectre, Lori, the daughter, Rorschach, and the comedian was still around. So the comedian worked for the government, so he was sort of cleared.
Yeah.
Lori just gave it up. She retired because she didn't really care about it anyway. Her mom was making her do it. And then Night Owl say that he will be retiring, although he will not be making his identity public. So nobody knows that Daniel is Night Owl. Night Owl's just like gone into hiding. And this is the only other active vigilante is called Rorschach, real name unknown. He expresses his feelings toward compulsory retirement in a note left outside police headquarters, along with a dead multiple rapist. And it's just this dead guy with a sign that says never, still like stuck to his chest. So, I mean, he definitely like, if you're a rapist, then he'll kill you.
You know what I mean? Dexter style, you know.
If you're a bad person to his code, then he has no problem killing you because he's making the world a better place. So, like, we see him break some guy's hand for no reason. Like, he's definitely an odd guy. So, one question: we haven't really seen him like take off his mask, but do you think we've actually seen Rorschach without his mask at this point?
Not at this point, but we were about to.
What do you think?
I don't think so. I'm not sure.
Are we still in the first?
Like, is he another?
This is like in the first four issues.
Oh yeah.
If you've seen his face,
yeah.
Because we've seen him like lift it up to eat, but not like uncover his whole
head. Yeah, I did see his bean mouth.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I know who it is in issue three.
I wasn't even thinking about that.
Also, well, no, he's actually in at the funeral too, I think. At the end of it.
I think you're right. If you, I mean, you used to say who it is. Like,
well, the guy with the sign that says the end is nigh.
Yeah.
Rorschach.
That's Rorschach.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know that you know that for sure, but like, if you look at his,
I mean,
like,
yeah, his face is the same. Like,
it matches, and he's in a lot of strategic places.
No, see, and I didn't know that at all. I wasn't even looking for it.
There. So you'll know, yeah, like now you'll notice him just sort of being around.
I think chapter 3 didn't make as much sense to me because I was like, why is this homeless guy here?
Yeah.
And that kind of ties it.
Wait, when was there the homeless guy?
Well, this guy right here.
Yeah, the guy that's always talking to the newspaper guy.
Yeah.
The end is also, did you notice that, like, this comic book is from the 80s? And in my mind, the pop art style from the story that the kid's reading in chapter 3, that's what I think comics would have looked like in print, actually, in the 80s.
Yeah, some of them did.
And so Watchmen seems so much higher quality in the print, that is what I would expect it to look like. And it's just kind of ironic that this is set in that time period.
Yeah. That's an interesting point. Do we see a lot of that comic book yet?
It's only
issue 3, right?
It's like the first like bit of...
So
it comes back to it.
Yeah. No, it definitely comes back to it. So there's this old man that works at like a newspaper stand, and that's where Rorschach's character always buys his newspapers. And he always buys like the same like one or two newspapers. And then there's this little kid. He's not really a kid. He's a teenager. He's smoking a cigarette. So
he could be a kid.
I guess he could be a kid. But so he's just like sitting on the street reading a comic book that, like, rather than buy it from the stand, he's just like sitting next to the stand reading the comic book. And so we get that as a narrator now too. And you can tell that because it looks like scrolls, because it's a pirate story. And so we get a little bit of that sort of mixed in with the first part of that. Kind of all throughout that issue, actually, it does that. What do you think of that part so far?
I really, really like that part. That was cool. And I like going back in between the comic book dialogue and then that guy, the comic book stand guy who is
kind
of ridiculous. And also, he's the kid is reading kind of two different comics in the story, isn't he? It seems like it switches from being like one kind of Robinson Crusoe kind of thing to like a Night of the Living Dead thing at the end.
No, it's still the same. They do look like zombies on that page. That one right there.
Yeah.
They're not. They're just, those are dead bodies. Like, those are the sailors of his boat that have all died. But no, they do. I thought of that today too, that they totally just look like zombies at that point. So that story continues to play out. Like, you'll see him sort of like as a new issue comes out, that kid will go and read the next issue. Or I don't know if it's the same one, but he's constantly going back and reading it. So that story parallels to the story of Watchmen a lot. So, like, pay attention to what's happening in that and what's happening in like, this world in this story. Because
I'm not going to do that.
They play together real well. All right, you don't have to. But those were kind of, the first time I read Watchmen, those parts were some of my least favorite. So I'm going to try really hard.
The comic books?
Yeah, I didn't really care. Those parts kind of took me out of it. So I'm going to try better to follow that part a little bit more.
You know what did not take me out of it?
What?
A threesome with two big blue guys.
Yeah, that's a pretty crazy scene.
So what happens after...
Okay, so add that to a power that we know that Dr. Manhattan has.
He can duplicate himself.
He can duplicate himself. Oh, yeah, because he's also downstairs washing the dishes or something.
No, he's like doing an experiment.
That's what it is. She's like, are you kidding?
Yeah.
Yeah, she doesn't appreciate that.
So this is right after the comic book.
So this is issue three, then?
Which we see supposedly Rorschach. I don't know if we're supposed to know that.
I don't know that it messes with the plot, but like... If you pay attention to like that character going forward, I think you would figure it out at some point. Like it's not hidden necessarily, but it's not just told.
It's not like
to
trying to tell you.
Right? Yeah. But if you pick up on it, you're fine.
Yeah. So here we see Dr. Manhattan trying to make Lori happy, but yeah. He doesn't know how to, he's like a Terminator basically. he doesn't know how to feel.
Yeah.
Feelings.
And we kind of learn a little bit more behind that in issue four. Mm-hmm. But it's sort of that just he's now so smart and can do so much that, like,
nothing else matters.
Human interactions just don't matter. Like, he's thinking about other stuff. And so she needs somebody to, like, be there.
Yeah. Cause she's
and
a
be
person.
A human. But, like, he's, you know, he's like, I can't get into your stuff.
Well, he's like, I can get into your stuff and my stuff and the cleaning stuff and all the stuffs at the same time.
And she's like, I want you just one normal person.
Yeah, so she felt like she was getting, you know, a very small piece of his overall attention, which she was.
Yeah.
The treatment of women in this book was... It is definitely a little rough.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might be a commentary on that part
in general.
That point in society. Anyway, in comic books in general. Because he's kind of making commentary on comic book characters in general. So,
yeah.
It might be related to the industry. I'm not really sure, but that's a good point. Oh, I like this one right after his duplication scene. It has these kind of paralleled panels where it's just like it shows.
Oh, yeah.
Janie, I guess. Is that her when she's older?
So that's her. That's her older, and she's got cancer. And is she like talking to a reporter?
Yeah, about Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah, and this is kind of where we learn that being around Dr. Manhattan could have some physical consequences for average human beings.
Exposure.
Yeah, so he's like going into basically on a talk show.
Oh, yeah. And they're like, your friend Wally died. We meet Wally later.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Lori's kind of, she went over to
Daniel's house.
To Daniel's
house. Mr. Night Owl. And they're kind of hanging out and stuff.
It kind of goes back and forth.
Netflix and chill.
But then they get in a fight right before that. So that's why she left.
Well, yeah. Because, I mean, he's just not, Dr. Manhattan's just being old Dr. Manhattan.
But then, like what you're saying, that's when that pops up is whenever they were talking about cancer.
Yeah.
Yep.
I can't figure out why he's so blue in like these three.
Oh, well, because the makeup guy was like, we need to get you into makeup so we can make you more
dark
blue.
Enough? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So someone in the crowd stands up and is like, you are a terrible
person.
Well, thing and that you caused cancer to all your lovers.
Meanwhile, Lori and Daniel are getting mugged and they're like, we're superheroes, damn it. And then they just kick everyone's ass.
Because he's a superhero doing people stuff and they're people doing superhero stuff.
That is interesting. And they don't have their magical powers.
Both of them don't look like they should be where they are.
No.
And Dr. Manhattan is on TV at the same
time.
And
he's on TV getting yelled at and beaten up.
Yeah, and it's all because Lori has came out about the cancer, so...
Or Jane.
Or Jane.
I think it was Jane. Yeah, Janie Slater was his girlfriend who we meet in issue four of, like, back when he had the accident that turned him into Dr. Manhattan.
And here it comes back to the comic book.
Yeah, that narration comes back in. Because he just, like, another part where he teleports the entire audience. He said, leave me alone. And boom, he just zaps them home. And like a couple people have a heart attack. Doesn't it say that?
Yeah.
And die from being like immediately transported inside.
Oh, that was whenever that was like the protesters. Oh, but he does do that here.
Yeah. But he just zaps everyone back home and then essentially just kind of decides he's over it. He's just like, yes, for Arizona first, I think, then Mars, because they're asking him where he's going, and he just, like, disappears.
I think what happened there is he was thinking about Janie and his current problems with Lori, and mm-hmm. he was just like, I think he started to feel the time span that he'd been dealing with these problems, and it was just, like, kind of overwhelming.
Yeah.
When he could be doing something more worthwhile, too.
Yeah.
At the same time. We learn at the end of this. Well, no, there's still like.
Oh, well, they put a fallout shelter on like his. What is that that they're putting in?
Well, like, he lives in like a power plant.
Yeah, so they're like quarantining his workspace.
Yeah.
So that's where he walks in, and then he's just like, peace.
Yep.
And we see him on. Oh, he does. Oh, he goes to Arizona first, goes in and grabs a picture off of a wall of an abandoned building that later we also find it was some kind of test base. Grabs a picture and zap, he's on Mars.
Mm-hmm. And then we go back to the comic book.
Yep.
Yeah. And also throughout the whole chapter, there was when there were the frames with the newsstand guy, it seemed like there was constantly a little bit of paranoia about Russia, and that kind of culminates mm-hmm. at the end of the chapter.
Yeah. And it's sort of like the Cold War stuff, Vietnam stuff. Like, it does kind of have some of those things that we went through as a world.
Yeah.
At that. But he's just sort of changed them a little bit because of the actual influence that superhuman people would have had. Like, Dr. Manhattan totally would have changed some of those things. So,
yeah,
we do get a little bit more of that.
You see, we eventually see Rorschach going, he reads the paper, seeing that Dr. Manhattan leaves.
And then, or wait, no, that's not Rorschach. Or I guess it's Rorschach, but he wakes up Daniel, the Night Owl guy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But then he goes back to the comic book mm-hmm. guy, the stand.
Yeah, and he takes the earlier meaning from The End Is Near that we think is Rorschach, had on his sign. And he takes this Russia invades Afghanistan as like a sign that,
like, it's the end of the world.
Yeah, like, it's about to be bad. Yeah.
Well, it's like the start of World War III.
Yeah, because, and essentially it's because Dr. Manhattan left Earth, so all these countries just, that have been stockpiling mm-hmm. nuclear arms are now just like, oh, cool, now we can fight each other.
Yeah, because he was like the USA's biggest defense system.
And he's just essentially left. So now, like, the US, North America, they're just having a bunch of missiles aimed at him. And we see Nixon there, But yeah, World War III is.
Yeah, and I was wondering about that as well. Nixon was the president in the 80s in this book because, Nixon was obviously in office in, like, the late 60s, early 70s.
So I think they explain it, but I think, like, because we won Vietnam, they're just like, you can be president forever. Like, okay. I think they give him more terms than in reality.
That makes sense.
Also, the power of the presidency would be super diminished in this world. When you've got somebody like Dr. Manhattan, it's like the president is like...
And now he doesn't
have Dr. represent the people.
Well, you even see that. He's like, I'm not really sure what to do here. Because they're weighing the pros and cons of like attacking now as opposed to some other time, and they're seeing like where their missiles could attack the United States. And meanwhile, Dr. Manhattan's on Mars having a moment.
Yeah, and in chapter 4, we get really into that moment.
And before we jump to chapter 4, one thing we haven't really talked about is every issue ends with a quote. And like the issue 1 is a Bob Dylan quote. Issue 2, I think, is another Bob Dylan quote. And then one of them's a Bible verse.
Yeah, that's the end of chapter 3.
It's Elvis Costello is number 2. Yeah, then 3 is a quote from Genesis.
I thought 4 was a quote.
And I think 4 is Albert Einstein, I believe.
Yes,
yeah, it is. It's Albert Einstein. I really like that quote. I think that, like, they're all good. Like, the quotes do tie back to sort of what just happened. But I think, I don't know, just like, for one, issue 4 of this is so far, like I said, an amazing issue of a comic book. I think it stands alone as just a really interesting.
It's one of the greatest singles. Yeah, that's one of the greatest single issues of any comic I've ever read.
It is incredible. And then it ends with this thing about Albert Einstein that totally ties, you know, they tie it in really well because it's about a watchmaker.
And, also relativity and the time scale and so cool. How he goes back and forth.
Yeah. So I'd say issue 4 is definitely our favorite one. And it's an origin story. I mean, really, because we get a kind of, it's like we've heard a narration from the original Night Owl from his autobiography, but then we also get a pretty good history of kind of all of that also, like from Dr. Manhattan's perspective, because it goes back to sort of as him as a kid is where it goes back to, is like it goes that far back to where he's like it. He definitely looks like a college student, and he's taken up his father's watchmaking thing. And then his dad sees the atomic bomb that was dropped in Hiroshima, and he's just like, you need to go be a scientist because, like, watchmaking is a way of the past. Like, you have to.
And what's really strange is it's like he really just wanted to put things together and make stuff.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And that's because it kind of comes back to that watchmaking part to where, like, he did develop those skills because, he fixes Janie's watch later. So it's like he knew that stuff. I really like that quote, though, where the dad says, my profession is a thing of the past, talking about watchmaking. Instead, my son must have a future. I think it's just the motives behind that, I think, was really cool. Mm-hmm. That he literally just throws what his kid is working on, like, out the window. And it's like, no, you need to do bigger things than make a watch.
Well, yeah, that funny. Part seemed a little bit unrealistic to me, but
yeah.
That dad was dedicated.
Is fantastical, but I think I really liked it.
Well, if you think about his character, he's, you know, always worried about bigger things than what's happening, which kind of goes, we see that in chapter 4. But also when he meets Janie in the bar in like the he's like, well, my dad sort of pushed me into it. That happens to me a lot. Other people seem to make all my moves for me.
Yeah. And we see that
up till now.
Yeah. And we see that totally through this issue of just like all this, most of the situation he gets put in, even once he becomes Dr. Manhattan, are still like, he's not making decisions until like the first decision in this origin story of him that he makes is when he just says, like, I'm going to Mars. You know what I mean? Like up until that point, he's just sort of like doing what's expected of him.
Right.
Or what happens to him. So we kind of see where he starts to just be like, you know what? I'm done with that stuff.
Well, I think he gets his own agency, right?
Mm-hmm. So it goes back to him to where it's like, okay, he's gone through college. He starts working at a, I forget what it's called, but it's Gila Flats. Yeah. In 1959, he started working in Gila Flats. It's a test base for like
all kinds of stuff. It's kind of like the Manhattan Project.
Yeah, exactly. So he's working on some stuff there, and I'm not even going to try to explain what this machine does because it doesn't make sense to me. But there's a machine that they're making that will it removes the intrinsic field. Or no, that's what one of the experiments was. But I don't know. It's this crazy machine, and
he's on a date.
I think it's called the Intrinsic Field Center. But yeah, I have no clue what they were doing with that.
The Intrinsic Field Center. And they're trying to like figure out a gravity thing. That's what it was. That they're they're trying to separate objects from their intrinsic fields. No radiation gets out from that test chamber that they've built. Holding stuff together apart from gravity is what they're trying to do. Yeah.
Which is really interesting because the next thing that happens is he starts remembering meeting Janie and has a picture of them and he drops it. And he's thinking about all of this as it's dropping.
Like where the picture was like back then, where it is now, where it will be.
I think he says it takes like, you know, 10, 15 seconds for it to drop all the way down to the surface of Mars. But so like he's going on a date.
And then, we pretty much get a history of like his relationship with Janie, who is another science researcher there where he worked. Yeah. And so it's like kind of giving their whole history.
Yeah, he has a watch that he's made
Well, no, it's her fixed. Watch.
It's her watch.
Yeah. And that, it says that fat guy stepped on it. So yeah. He fixes it.
He fixes it. That's right. So you see him fixing that watch.
And ironically, his father made him get rid of those watch parts. Mm-hmm. But this watch is ultimately what leads to his future. So it was kind of funny that his dad threw that out, because it ended up like him going back to that hobby, which is a thing in the past, actually
in that
put him down this path.
Yeah, because it gets, he left it in that machine.
He fixed it and left it in his lab coat, so he runs to get it, and the test chamber closes behind him.
Also, why did he leave his lab coat in that chamber? He was like,
that's, he sounds like a bad scientist.
That's where the handles are, is in the trailer.
Yeah, that's not where it should be.
In the,
it doesn't really show, but it's like he just left it sitting somewhere. But so he gets locked in there, and they're like, oh no, like what's going to happen? And then he eventually just gets vaporized.
Yeah.
And that scene is crazy, where it's just like that skeleton that's just
exploding. The light is taking me to pieces.
Yeah. So then the people in the test base just start seeing like a circulatory system just like floating around. Yes. And that one's really funny. And then, like, they see, like, another ghost of, like, a man covered in muscles. And then, like, boom, Mr. Manhattan appears in full, and he's just this naked blue guy.
Full frontal.
Yeah.
Doc Manhattan.
Yep. And then his name was John, is it Osterman?
I don't remember.
Yeah, John Osterman. Mm. And
he's from Princeton.
So then he's just, like, trying to be a normal dude, you know? Like, she gets him a ring, and like, you know, they're just trying to be normal.
Yeah, she's like, I love you, but you look ridiculous.
Yeah. So then they try to like make him kind of a superhero right there, because since he works for the government. And that's where somebody gives him a little, they build him a suit, and it has the
has like a
the helmet. Atomic power symbol or something. Yeah, he's on
like,
it.
What is, why do I would have like, what is it, helium or?
He says it's meaningless. A hydrogen atom would be more appropriate. I don't think I shall be wearing this. And then he just carves that symbol into his forehead. So I guess that's a hydrogen atom.
Well, yeah.
Okay. So then he's just has like branded that into his forehead, which I think is crazy. Like you see the smoke sort of zap off. And
he starts getting super popular with everybody.
Yeah. So they kind of use him in a lot of ways, like they use Captain America. You're right. They like put him in front of the cameras. And this is where all the other superheroes like Night Owl and comedian Captain Metropolis. I can't think of what the other one I was going to say is, but Hooded Justice, like all of them. This is kind of where they start to fizzle out, just because, like, you know, now there's magical person there. And it shows him like take a gun apart, blow up a tank. So, you know, he gets used by the government a bit.
And this is where he meets Laurie.
Yeah, and then he's sort of introduced to more of the superhero. So he meets Laurie. Janie's jealous, of course.
Well, and there's one other thing that we kind of missed back there. Well, one of the questions surrounding him is that he knows all of this about time and space, and yet he didn't save JFK.
Right. Because he acknowledges that, like, yeah, this would be so many months before this happened, and, like, I knew. And then when he acknowledges that to somebody, I think to Janie, she's like, why would you not stop that? And he was like, I just know everything. Like, I'm not gonna change everything. And, like, it's already happened, kind of. It's like he couldn't – it's almost like he's saying, I can't affect it, but it's already all done.
I feel like – he feels like it's already happened, or it's never going to happen. It's like, it's just set in stone in a way.
Yeah. And so this is also kind of like Arrival, in that, like she sort of sees all of that, but it's not like she can affect it necessarily.
Yeah.
Or affect a change.
Yeah.
A positive change out of it.
Yeah. Cause a big point of that was like, if that movie was like, if you knew your future, would you do anything differently? And like from her experience, we find that like, no, she doesn't do anything differently. And I think, I don't know if like that's where Dr. Manhattan is, to where it's a choice, or if it's just, it just doesn't matter, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so we kind of see, that part is really cool.
Things go south with Janie and then him meeting Lori.
Yeah. Yeah. So does she leave him at that point? Yeah. So I think she's left him. Mm-hmm. He's hanging out with Lori. And then he goes to Vietnam mm-hmm. with the comedian. So we kind of go back to that part that we saw.
Because the comedian hasn't retired. He's just a war hero.
He works for the government pretty much. Yeah, so, like he.
And he goes full Godzilla size.
Yeah, that one's really cool. So we win Vietnam. It's May. I have been here for 2 months. The Viet Cong are expected to surrender within the week. Many have given themselves up already. Often they ask to surrender to me personally, their terror of me balanced by an almost religious awe. So that just sort of also shows where, like, people are questioning if he's God. You know what I mean? He's just, like, blowing stuff up. And it's like, it's sort of funny that in this alternate reality, we win Vietnam in, not very much time.
Yeah.
He's just like blowing up everybody.
Like, he's been there 2 months. And it's like, we win.
Yeah. And he also affects some other subtle changes, mm-hmm. like the invention of the electric car and availability of mm-hmm. airships. And they kind of just throw that in there.
Yeah.
And I think it was,
cause that's when Hollis is saying, like, oh, I'm going to retire and work on cars. And he was like, oh, don't worry. Like, you at least have 10 years before I come through again and mess up the thing that mm-hmm. you love.
You know, this sequence, reminds me of a Forrest Gump when he's just like all these events like happening. That's like when he's remembering his life. Like,
it does kind of do that. Cause he just jumps around all these crazy things.
Yeah. Not like as much detail, obviously, but.
Not as comically, but
it's just kind of how it's set up because
yeah,
just keeps going from thing to thing to thing.
So it's like then there are protests, and I think this is after or right before they decide to make all vigilantes make themselves known.
Yeah,
so there are protests about that, and that's where he just zaps a bunch of people home, and it's like mm-hmm. two people suffered a heart attack, mm-hmm. more would have suffered during a riot, I am certain. So, you know, he sort of doesn't care that two people died, but he's more logical than emotional.
Right.
It's kind of like where he's at now. But we're also seeing through this whole story that, like, he really did care for some of these people, you know, but it's, I don't know. It's like he's got some sort of block, but he's not entirely
void. He's trying really hard to have feelings again, but he's just, it's like he naturally doesn't.
Yeah. Well, and I really like the kind of the full circle at the part where it talks about the bottom page where it talks about that there's a clock, that one right there, where it says that there was like a clock hand on Time magazine for the
for Hiroshima.
Yeah, it's like a anniversary of Hiroshima. And then it says like hands frozen, and it shows his hand on the beer with Janie. And it's mm-hmm. like, because ultimately, like, that's where he wanted to be. But then that accident of him turning in to Dr. Manhattan sort of messed him up and took things away from him. So it's like just, I think the imagery and the symmetry in this issue alone is incredible. Because it does kind of go through those three time zones or, you know, like.
But it kind of starts with a fight and ends with a fight.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I think it's just told wonderfully.
And we kind of talked about how he was kind of getting over, like, the trivial travails of human life. And then very closely, and on the next page, we're with him turning Mars into, like, a crazy erector set.
Because, like, issue 2 is where we sort of see him and Lori break up. But then issue 4 also shows a lot of how they get together. But then sort of jumps to the present time and shows where he's just like, look, I'm done. I'm on Mars now.
Doing Mars.
He builds this crazy, crazy thing. But yeah, no, that's a beautiful issue. And then the part at the end of that one was really interesting because it sort of goes into, so it's called Dr. Manhattan Superpowers and the Superpowers by Professor Milton Glass.
It kind of talks about we have the
Da Vinci destruction human thing, but it's Dr. Manhattan. That's pretty cool. But yeah, there it goes into more of the science, like the things that sort of happen in the background.
And the way it ties everything together is it's like, it's really like, how does Dr. Manhattan change that whole equation?
Yeah. The technology that Dr. Manhattan has made possible has changed the way we think about our clothes, our food, our travel. We drive in electric cars and travel in leisure and comfort and clean economical airships. So it's, you know, he's done a lot of stuff, but at the same time, like, go back and look at that, like you said earlier, that the city is kind of a dirty city. You know what I mean? Like, so he's made advancements, but it's still not, like, a luxury city or anything necessarily.
And I wonder if that's, you know, part of it, of him leaving.
Well, and that may also play into the fact that his tipping of the balance of power, it also took kind of the normal day-to-day superheroes off the streets too. I mean, I know that the criminals that they were going after were changing as well, but I think that also probably discouraged them from moving forward, you know.
I think this is a cool line also from that part. So he's talking about, like, in the article, they're talking about the kind of the current state and how Dr. Manhattan has contributed. And they're saying, talking about, like, how the administration is act. So our current administration believes otherwise. They continually push their unearned advantage until American influence comes uncomfortably close to key areas of Soviet interest. It is as if, with a real live deity on their side, talking about Dr. Manhattan, our leaders have become intoxicated with a heady draft of omnipotence by association, without realizing just how his very existence has deformed the lives of every living creature on the face of this planet. So it's like some of it, he's saying that he's good, but also that he's bad.
Yeah, too much of a comfort zone.
Yeah, and it's like he's sort of put our administration just too at ease, that they're like, oh, we'll never lose because we've got this guy. But now he's not there, and there's like
panicking. There's no contingency.
Yeah.
Well, they were kind of faced with the unexplainable.
Yeah.
You know? So
that's true.
it's like if you were looking in the face of some kind of overwhelming power, like a god.
Yeah.
But you could actually physically see a manifestation of that being.
Yeah.
That's what Dr. Manhattan is. He's like God in their presence.
Well, yeah. So that's issues 1 through 4. We've got 8 more.
I feel like the 4 issues was a good.
Yeah, I mean, it's got, they all pack quite a bit.
Because we're at an hour 20, about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to the next section.
Oh, yeah. I almost kept reading, but.
Yeah, no, I think it's cool that, like, so, I guess, what are you excited, like, just from what you've read, to where you're thinking, like, oh, I can't wait to see more of this, or, like, anything in particular that you, like, predictions on what you think might happen with some of the things, like.
I felt like,
what do you
to me, Rorschach was the main narrator. Like, as I was going, I feel like it kept going back to him mm-hmm. at key moments. And I was just like,
yeah,
that's, I don't know.
Yeah, I want to know more of his backstory.
Yeah.
Because he seems like that's really what we have the least of.
He's an interesting character.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite characters for sure.
Yeah.
He's so different from everybody else.
He is. And it's like, I think he definitely has a very clear definition of, like, right and wrong, is where it seems like a lot of the other characters we've met really don't, you know what I mean? Like, we haven't seen anyone do anything necessarily like based on moral judgment, but Rorschach is very like deep in his convictions. And, you know, I think sometimes he goes too far, but like, he does get stuff done.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's sort of like where Batman would never kill anybody, you know, or he definitely tries not to. And like, same with Superman, like a lot of superheroes that we've sort of all grown up with have never really crossed that line. And Rorschach is just like not afraid to cross it at all. And neither is a comedian.
Yeah.
But like,
in a kind of crazier
way. Dr. Manhattan's killed people. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're all sort of.
Well, they get stuff done.
More fun. Yeah.
They're the ones that were still active. Everyone else quit.
It's a grittier superhero book than like those other ones.
I mean, also I want to know who killed the comedian, because I don't think we know that. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any, I honestly, that's one thing, like, I'm like 80% sure I remember who it is, because.
Oh, I have no idea.
Yeah. I don't, they no really idea. Haven't given enough to where like, I think you could have a good guess, but yeah, I'm excited to get to that part. Cause I really can't remember how that's revealed.
Yeah, I don't
know. At least, but I'm pretty sure I remember who did it. But, and why. Like, we don't even know the why,
yeah.
Let alone who did it.
And the funny thing is, we haven't talked about that at all. That's how much goes on in these
four. Yeah, because it's really just sort of the thing that gets the ball rolling. Mm-hmm. Like, that happens, and then, you know, Rorschach just starts tying things together, and it's like, you know, different things happen.
Yeah.
Dr. Manhattan leaves.
Yeah, obviously, that's really interesting.
Night Owl and Silk Spectre, they beat up all the people that mugged him, and then they started like making out furiously, right?
Well, they almost did.
They almost did. Okay.
They both wanted it, you could see. Honestly, I don't remember the movie at all.
Oh, really?
No, not at all. Like, I only saw it once, but I don't know. I don't remember anything in it, actually. Yeah.
And there are different versions of that, too, so we'll have to kind of figure out the one we
want to watch. There's, like, theatrical one is probably.
Director's Ultimate or something like that. But, well, all right. So this is, I'd say that's it for this one. Any final thoughts?
No, thanks for having me on. That was fun.
Absolutely. So Lake will be here for this entire mini series. So I'm excited about that. See how it goes. But all right. Thanks for listening.